Welcome, audiences of all ages, to episode 92 of the Nerd Stravaganza podcast, where we trend general audience but aren't afraid to go NC-17 when we need to. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And tonight, we are introducing special guest and film critic, Eric.
How's it going, guys?
Very well, sir. Welcome to the show. And tonight, we will be discussing how vision can ruin fandom. But before we get into tonight's topic, we will start things off in our usual Nerd Stravaganza fashion with our Geekly Weekly, Weekly Geekly Roundup. Brian, you go first so as to demonstrate to Eric how to give a proper Geekly Weekly, Weekly Geekly Roundup.
It's been a bit of a boring week for me. I, as some of you may have heard, kind of brushing up on the job skills. And I haven't really done much except study grant writing and study HTML and CSS. Pretty much until my eyes bleed. I've lost a lot of sleep over that. And at more than one point, I've closed my eyes and seen brackets and tags floating in front of me.
That's kind of geeky.
That's usually when I stop.
Your career path is in keeping with our general theme here on the show, I will say.
Well, my hopeful career path.
Yes, yes.
And to blow off steam and kind of exercise the floating div tags, I've been working on some painting, just some cool miniature bases in different themes, kind of not for anything in particular. A lot of fun.
Awesome, man. Sounds like you've been up to a lot of brushing up.
Yes, yes. Brushing up on talents and on brushstrokes.
Brilliant, sir. All right, does that conclude your update?
Yes, that it does.
Okay, Eric, with that excellent example, it is now over to you, sir. What have you been up to?
All right. First and foremost, and because I'm still kind of healing from the deal right now, got my chest tattooed today. Very happy with it. About an hour ago. Finished up my Mario Brothers tattoo chest piece. Two giant bullet bills with really traditional bird wings on them. I'm really, really happy with how it turned out. So I'm really jazzed about that. Nerdiest thing of the week, without question, and by far the most worthy, is Titanfall. If you have not played the Titanfall beta, if you do not have an Xbox One or a PC where you can play it, find someone, anyone, and get there and play it. There has been a huge, huge, huge amount of fanboyism online, mostly coming, and I have to say it because, of course, they have to defend the PS4 community, who is claiming it is just another Call of Duty with mechs. That is the catchphrase of the internet, Call of Duty with mechs. I hate to tell those people, and you're welcome to debate me, you're wrong. You're 100% wrong. The game does so much right. It's so inviting, not only, and actually this is something I wanted to point out. It's so inviting to even noobs, and I hate to use that word, because there are NPCs on the field during multiplayer. So everyone has something to kill. It's pretty spectacular in that sense. The game is just incredibly inviting, and it does everything right that I've seen so far. I've watched the Captain America trailer just about every day since the Super Bowl, which I didn't watch, because that wouldn't make for a good nerd show, let's be honest. But I am just jazzed about the fact that Falcon is in it. I'm really freaking happy that Falcon is in it. Every little instance of Falcon opening his wings on that trailer makes me excited and giddy, and I can't help it. And I'm not sure who was aware, but also the Guardians of the Galaxy teaser was launched today. And surprisingly enough, I've only seen two of my friends on Facebook post anything about it. I posted it, and one other friend posted it, and I think I got like two likes on it, and nobody cared. Maybe people just don't know what the heck it is, but I'm pretty happy about that as well. The trailer looks, or the teaser in this case, it's only 15 seconds long, looks really good. And of course, we saw RoboCop. And I don't want to get too far into RoboCop, because I know that's part of our theme for today. But, yeah, so that happened. And lastly, you talked about blowing off steam. The only steam I really felt the need to blow off was after watching the Bill Nye Ken Ham debate. And I know this may not be the forum for all of the nuances involved in that debate, but I really had this urge to just kind of hit things a lot. And I have had no way to vent that at all.
This is the appropriate forum to vent such frustration, sir.
I know it is, and I know that's not necessarily today's topic. If you ever feel like doing a science-based show, you know I'm your guy for that. But yeah, I just couldn't. I just, you know, I don't want to offend anyone. I don't want to ruin this for anyone. I'm just going to say there was a very clear winner, and there was someone who really just came in with one piece of information that they were going to repeat ad nauseum. And it was painful.
Yeah, I'm not going to come out and say there was a winner either, but his name might rhyme with skill by.
Something like that, yeah. If I had to throw any punches his way, he was way too nice because he's Bill Nye. He's Bill Nye! He has to be nice. That was my only gripe with Bill Nye. I met the man, actually. He's a very nice guy, and it showed in this debate. Because if you could be nice under these circumstances, and it was slipping. You could see it in his face. It was slipping. If you could be nice in this circumstance, you could be nice to anyone all the time, ever. And I think that's it for me. I know that was probably a lot, and I did get to vent there, so thank you.
No problem. We do allow a venting session for all new guests. Well, that brings it around to me. First of all, let me say that was a great update, sir. Brian, would you agree that was a pretty above average first ever Geekly Weekly Weekly Geekly?
Yeah, I think you did well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I try my best.
And you succeed. You succeed. Now I will try to live up to your update with my update. First of all, I have to concur that the Titanfall beta was awesome. And that game lives up to all the hype. And any fanboy criticism is really without much merit, in my opinion. The game does a great job of, as a friend of ours said, Eric, melding sort of the sci-fi zaniness of Halo, not to impugn Halo, just saying, with the sort of snap and precision of a military shooter plus mechs. It's really cool. And Titanfall, if not a system seller, is definitely a system nudger, I would say. Also went and saw RoboCop, as you mentioned, which is sort of one of the big motivators for tonight's episode. We will get to that in a minute. And I personally closed down Irrational Games, or Irrational Studios, whatever it's called, by completing their game BioShock Infinite. Once my status updated on my PS4 that the game was beaten, they went ahead and closed up shop. They were waiting for me, kind of like a terminal patient waits for that last relative to get there before giving up the ghost. So sorry to fans of that studio, but I had to beat the game eventually. I am trying to work my way through my last-gen catalog before Titanfall comes out. Had to be done, guys, and I just want to apologize. And finally, I beat Tearaway for the PS Vita. And I don't remember if I mentioned that last episode or not, but it's worth mentioning again. Great game if you own a Vita. Good reason to own a Vita if you don't. And that concludes my update. Now, on with the show. Now, tonight's topic is all about vision and fandom. It's going to be entitled, and I hereby declare this and therefore set it down in audio stone, Your Vision is Ruining My Fandom. And it's all about the vision of film creators who either make sequels to or remakes of films we love, kind of screwing up our love affair with the previous films. And RoboCop definitely motivated tonight's episode because this is something we've been talking about for a while, whether it was going to ruin the original franchise or make it better or worse. And I think that both you, Brian, and you, Eric, are kind of perfect sides of my coin to refer to, because on the sci-fi side, Eric, I know you're a big fan of the Alien or Aliens franchise, however you prefer to pronounce it.
Yeah, which, either one is fine.
Okay. Which recently, for many people, terminated in a movie called Prometheus. And you, Brian, on the fantasy side, are a fan of Tolkien and Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit books. And the most recent Hobbit movie, which was the, what the heck was the subtitle of it?
The Desolation of Smaug.
Thank you for that correct pronunciation, Eric. Yes. The Desolation of Smaug definitely did not resonate with you in a positive way, Brian. So, and I think a lot of Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, Tolkien fans probably share your sentiments regarding that film. So I think you guys both come from similar perspectives on either side of the coin, whereas I probably didn't have the investment in either franchise. So I was able to play the Joe Popcorn's advocate while you guys were the incensed fans. And I think tonight is all about discussing how badly someone's vision can screw with our love of franchise and why that happens, why it doesn't happen, whether or not we have a right to be incensed, etc. So we'll just take this where it goes, but that's the general motivation and the general gist of tonight's episode. So where do we start first? You want to go sci-fi first with Prometheus or fantasy first with The Hobbit?
I'll leave it to your call. I guess I have some stuff to talk about for either. So yeah, I'm going to leave this one in your court there.
I will flip a coin if I can find one.
The coin flip seems to be a running theme tonight.
It does. Okay, flipping coin. Heads, it's Hobbit. Tails, it is Lord of the Rings. Wait, no. Tails, it's Prometheus. And what do you know? It's Prometheus. So,
All right.
You were on the spot first.
Oh, boy. Where to start?
Well, let me recount this. Brian, have you seen Prometheus?
I watched it. It was kind of background. Didn't really grip me.
Okay. Good.
So
then you're more or less coming at it from the same perspective I was, because I went and saw it with Eric in the theater. I believe wasn't in IMAX, Eric?
We did go see it at IMAX, yes.
So it had my undivided attention, but it somehow managed to be background in spite of that. So I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah, and there was quite a fan turnout. There were a lot of alien shirts. There was a plush face hugger present, if I recall.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so it had quite the turnout. People were excited on the alien front. They really were. And I want to point out, they repeated to us over and over again that it was not an alien movie. But they did not say it wasn't an alien prequel, which for anyone who has seen it now, it's obviously an alien prequel.
Ooh, we can discuss that as to whether it is a direct prequel, but let's get into the reactions first. So we walk out of this awesome IMAX experience. I'm uncharacteristically underwhelmed after having watched a movie on the IMAX, because usually the sound and the sights are like, wow, this is awesome. And Eric is kind of shell-shocked, for lack of a better word. I think you were just kind of gibbering and like,
Yeah. I mean, you're talking to someone who gave episode one a bye the first time I saw it. I was like, maybe I need to see it again. It probably wasn't as bad as I thought. I'm just a major Star Wars fanboy, and I need to just give it a chance to grow on me. It's new.
I must have been drugged. Nothing could be that bad.
That's literally the mindset I walked out of episode one with. And I walked out of Prometheus livid. Like, not even remotely amused.
You were so livid, in fact, that months later, when it was on cable, you were at my house and you were contemplating whether or not to hang out, and Prometheus came on. I'm like, hey, why don't you hang out? Let's watch Prometheus. Your reaction was, I'm sorry, I'm just not ready for that yet. And you left.
No, yeah, it's too soon. Too soon. It's like revisiting the death of a best friend. It's too soon. You finally got it out of your head. Maybe you didn't deal with it and get the closure you hoped for, because that movie doesn't give you any. And yeah, like, reliving it is painful.
Well, I'm gonna play nonsensical movies advocate for this one, and I think Brian, you might be able to adopt a more neutral stance, as it didn't register with you one way or another. So let's first address the prequel. Now, I agree that it's a prequel in that it took place in the Aliens universe before the first movie where we meet Ripley. I will not concede, and I cannot accept that it is in any way tied into that storyline directly.
But I think we've given the movie long enough time that we're not spoiling this for anyone listening, that there's basically an alien at the end of the film. Okay. It's not quite an alien, but it's an alien.
It's a big, like,
xenomorphic thing.
It's a big zucchini-headed xenomorph, yes. But I think that was more kind of letting you know that this is the technology that results in sort of the morphologically similar aliens that you see later. In other words, the xenomorph sort of archetype is born out of this bioweapon system that these ancient hostile aliens created.
Fair enough. And if we look at it that way, you do actually take away one of my more minor gripes, which is that I now, as an alien fan, have to accept that the xenomorphs that I have grown to absolutely love are the result of a giant facehugger molesting a bald albino. I have to accept that.
Well, I would say my work here is done, but I feel like after all that eloquent argument, I've only taken away like a minor gripe.
Yeah, that's the minor one.
Brian, are you with us so far or what?
Yeah, following you.
I have to approach this movie in two different ways. I have to approach it, one, as a lover of sci-fi films, specifically the alien films. And I'm going to point out the first two and most of the third. I know I probably stand a little bit alone on that one, but I actually give the third a lot of credit. The only thing that ruins the third one for me, because it had great dialogue, it had kind of that feel that the first one had where things went a little slower, it was a little bit more horror-based as opposed to action-based. The CG is horrendous, and I wish they would go back and do it like a special edition. And I wish they would use the actual director's cut footage that they did on the Blu-ray, as opposed to the original cut, because it's a better cut. If they did that, I'd be ecstatic. But I can live with it. I kind of just squint my eyes at the really awful CG and remember that it was like the 90s, and I'm okay. Four is a nightmare, and I try to pretend it didn't happen. And then, of course, the AVP movies are just fodder, and we accept them as fodder. We try not to look at them as canon, and you go, oh, it's fun, they're fighting, I don't care. And you move on, because we know they're not good films, but hopefully they're a little fun to watch. And to be honest, I left both of those going, oh, they were kind of fun, okay.
Yeah.
But Prometheus, I approached one as this rampant fan who's now seeing the true director, the visionary behind this film in Ridley Scott, take on this format again, and I'm ecstatic. I'm like, we've all been waiting for this. This is mind-blowing. And then I have to approach it also as the fact that I'm a science teacher. And this is probably where 90% of my gripes come from. The Ridley Scott part comes from the fact that, to be honest, it's just actually kind of poor filmmaking. Character development is lousy. The plot doesn't really follow a really good flow. The movie never seems to hit a perfect stride of anything. There's some cool stuff in the movie. Don't get me wrong. I can isolate individual scenes that are fantastic. But overall, as a filmmaker, he's done so much better. So there was disappointment there. But the science teacher part of me went berserk and was furious, because this movie is full of scientists that don't act anything like scientists or human beings, for that matter. So they don't act like human beings at all. Not even a little bit. Nobody acts this way. So let's start with the science aspect of it. You have these two main scientists who are kind of pushing for this whole project. They already have their minds based in all this fantastical pseudoscience rhetoric and are not approaching this whole process scientifically at all. Apparently, they didn't vet anyone they hired for the program at all, because all of them are like emotional disasters. All of them are. Or they're just nonsensical idiots, which we'll get to some of those. And that's the problem with the film, is none of these characters are relatable. None of them. And they act moronically. So you have these two who don't act like scientists at all. So we have that. Let's jump way ahead to the fact... Oh, I want to point out, actually, I'm not going to jump ahead yet, that there's also an android with them who is a very young, handsome-looking guy. And that holds no merit right now, because the sad part is the android is the most relatable character in the movie, and it's the only well-acted part in the film, which is amazing. So we're going to jump way ahead. So now they're on the planet, and we're just going to go down the list of these characters and all the horrible things they do that make no sense. So you have the man who was hired. He's a geologist, but basically he was more of a cartographer. His job was to map the whole insides of this cavern. Now, he sends out these probes. These probes go through, and onto everyone in the party's wrist comes this three-dimensional holographic map of the whole place. Yeah, 10 minutes later, this man is lost and freaking out. He was hired to map the place. Everyone has a map on this wrist. Nobody else seems to be lost. The map maker got lost. Okay. And the thing is, they didn't even go that far. Like, I could pretty much just say, if you just turned around and walked back the way you came, you'd be fine.
It's like a big tunnel at this point.
It was like a big loop of a tunnel, right. He could just follow it around in a circle. He was bound to find the entrance, but instead he lost his mind. You have a biologist, and this one is my favorite, because that's, like, kind of my field. So, you have a biologist. He was hired. They go into this one tomb-looking area, and of course you see these stone things that... they're definitely giving an homage to the alien egg here, because it kind of opens, and this thing that looks kind of like a facehugger comes out, although it's more kind of snake-like. And it's swimming down a channel of black goo or something, and it pops up. Now, the biologist is very excited. So this thing rears up. He gets close to it, which, as a biologist, first of all, he didn't take pictures of this. Like, he doesn't have a camera. He's studying wildlife. He doesn't have a camera. Okay, he doesn't take a picture of this thing or anything.
He did have a helmet camera, I do want to point out. That was capturing all this footage.
Yeah, I agree, but, I mean, you see from the ship the kind of footage that's capturing. I mean, this is not really documenting well what you want to accomplish here. Maybe a zoom lens would be nice.
Okay.
You know, and I'm going to let that one slide a bit, but here's where it doesn't slide. Is this thing pops out of the goop, water, whatever, and his first instinct is to approach it. Which is kind of idiotic from a biology standpoint, especially when you're studying wildlife in its own habitat or whatever habitat you want to call this.
You know, it worked really well for Steve Irwin.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. And oddly enough, the same result. So this thing pops up. It now spreads itself open like a giant cobra.
Yes.
Now, any other person on Earth, including everyone watching the film and those who would probably like to scream at the screen at this point, just yell at it like, run away, what are you doing, idiot? He approaches closer and I'm going to quote here, says, who's a pretty girl? All right, so let's go through all the leaps in logic here. One, he's going to assume it's a girl. He has no idea what it is, but he's a scientist and he was hired to be a scientist. To his first instinct, upon seeing a what looks like large aggressive species that he's never seen before, is to quickly approach it and talk sweet to it. Guess what happens next?
It Wait, says yes and they live happily ever after?
There you go.
So
that guy's a nightmare.
Well, I just want to point out, Eric, that you might not be up to his level when it comes to immediately identifying characteristics of new species. He could tell it was female because there were no visible testicles.
Although he was kind of shaped like a penis.
A little bit, yeah.
A little shaped like a penis.
And he could tell by its aggressive approach to him that it was clearly a docile grazing animal. So there you go.
Right. That's precisely. It was grazing on the black goo. I mean, you know.
Right. So, coochie coo to a brand new species that science has never encountered before, and getting lost. A cartographer getting lost, yes.
Right. Now, here's my favorite thing, is you have the main character, the female lead. At some point, she gets impregnated with something from sleeping with a man who has become a zombie from black goo. That's the other feature, is there's so many things that happen with the biological stuff on here where you can't even keep track. In fact, I think somebody made a flowchart online of, like, this does this, and then if you add this to that, you get this creature, and then it just goes on and on. And it doesn't make any sense, like, biologically, why these two things mixing together would give you that result.
Well, you don't know that, Eric, because you don't know what black goo mixed with a rum and coke, such as the android slipped the male scientist, would do. That's a lot of variables.
Like, right, like, for example, the facehugger that I mentioned earlier. Well, here, let's go through it. Black goo turns a human male into a zombie.
A lot of things do that.
if that right. human zombie has sex with a human female, he impregnates her with a face hugger thing. If that face hugger thing then impregnates a huge bald albino, you get a precursor to a xenomorph.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Brian, do you not see the logic in this?
It depends on the kind of huge bald albino, but yeah, most huge bald albinos, I'm good with you.
Yeah.
I'm right there.
Mm-hmm. So what's the problem, Eric?
I have to assume that in The Princess Bride, if that guy just had no hair, there would have been aliens in the movie.
Say that, I was talking over you, so say that I have to assume in The Princess Bride again.
Yeah, so I have to assume in The Princess Bride, if the albino in the pit of despair had no hair, that there would be aliens in the movie.
Well, if he'd been impregnated, yes.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, one of those guys could have done something with black goo. It's a fantasy film.
Yeah, I mean, I have to assume that the black goo is some kind of nano machine, like gray goo analog that can basically do whatever it sees fit in order to further the aims of its creator. There, right. That's my excuse.
So now this female who has been impregnated with a facehugger goes into a pod where she performs surgery on herself with blatantly no anesthetic because she's screaming through the whole process and it's stapling her shut. By the way, I want to point out that she spends the rest of the film acting fine and not in pain, even though she has like 20 non-anesthetized staples in her stomach.
I think she was clutching her stomach now and then, but okay.
By the way, no internal sutures were done. Like, it just pulled her shut and stapled her the heck up.
It's future tech, bro. You don't get it.
Right, right. And again, these are the kind of things in movies that have good plot lines I'd usually let slide, but I had enough at this point. And so finally, this woman realizes what's going on. She realizes this ship is, like, headed to Earth to destroy everything. She runs into the cockpit of the ship they arrived in. Now, mind you, the people in the cockpit have no idea what's been going on. In walks a woman, recent from surgery, a sweaty, disheveled mess, and goes, "Ram it!" To which the captain says, "Okay." And to which the crew members go, "It was a pleasure serving with you, sir."
And they're cracking jokes and high-fiving as they throttle their doom. Yes.
I was blown. At that point, I was ready to get up and walk out, but I'm like, maybe they're going to have an alien at the end of this, so I should stick around. And I'm glad I did. I got to see it, and then I remembered what movie it was attached to, and I went, oh, yeah, there's that. So it was, yeah, the whole thing is just a disaster for me. I was miserable through the whole thing. And I kept, there was that part of me, again, like episode one, where as the film progressed, I'm like, it's going to get better. Like, this is just one weird part. It's going to get better. Oh, it did get better. I forgot. I don't know what year this movie was made. I'm saying that because they decided the best route to make an old man was to take the guy who played the android, who was a young actor, and put him in 1970s old man makeup, which didn't fool anyone.
Oh, he looked a bit more like Freddy Krueger than an old man, I thought.
Yeah, it was a disaster. Like, you could have just hired an old man. I mean, people change enough over time where an old man and a young guy, you would have gone, okay, that's kind of the same guy. I mean, as long as you didn't do, like, a white young man and a black old guy.
Right. Okay, so your objections are noted.
Yeah.
Brian, as somebody with no dog in this fight, what do you have to say?
Well, Eric, I hate to say it, but I think you just didn't get the movie. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. The black goo was that shit from District 9. And it was trying to turn them all into prawns, but the albinos were so resistant to it that it could only turn them into xenomorph predecessors.
Not directly, mind you, not directly. They had a plan, like, you know, and you know, the odd thing about it is the movie had like this undertone where they were kind of trying to work the intelligent design angle, which as someone who, you know, doesn't really follow the whole intelligent design thing, I was willing to buy into, because it was a clever way to approach it. It was very similar to like how Star Trek approached it. But the problem with it was they kept pushing it. Now, the funny part is I bought in really hard into the intelligent design aspect because I was like, when I watched this progression of one weird creature into another weird creature into another weird creature, I was like, well, that's a stupid design. So maybe intelligent design is actually right in the sense that it's actually not so intelligent design. Because that would explain our world perfectly.
Well, Brian is, I think, right on the money with his District 9 tie-in. And I'm going to back you up on the intelligent design thing. In the opening scene of the movie, they seed our planet with their genetic goo by consuming some of the black goo, and therefore you causing the genesis of life on our planet, or at least influencing the direction early life is going to take, and that's how we end up evolving.
Oh, I'm sorry. So we have to add to the equation black goo plus bald albino equals everything on the planet.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that worked through the transition through dinosaurs and if the reptiles hadn't died off, but somehow, and of course it's also not, they don't identify when those guys were here. That might have been, you know, maybe when the reptiles were on their way out. I don't really know. Or the big dinosaurs were on their way out. I don't know. Brian, any take on the chronology?
Well, I think we wouldn't have any problem believing it if someone said, like, aliens came down to Earth and just, you know, seeded the primordial ooze.
Right.
No, totally believable.
Right, and I'm okay with that. Star Trek went with that. I love Star Trek. I thought they did it well. It was kind of cool. I'm not nerdy enough to know the exact name of the episode on Next Generation or anything like that, but I am at least aware of the concept. It worked. Like, that part I had no issue with. What didn't work was everything after that moment.
Okay, I've given the only defense I could for Prometheus, which was regarding its position as a direct predecessor to the Aliens movies.
And there's word they're going to make these into like a trilogy.
I want them to.
And honestly, I do too, because I'm thinking maybe it will give me an understanding, or maybe like they'll realize their mistakes in the first one and the next two will be substantially better, because there was a lot of vocal criticism. Maybe they'll listen. Maybe they will not be George Lucas's. So yeah, that would be great.
I will say, and this is probably a good transition over to you, Brian, and your Middle Earth side of the fence, that I want there to be sequels, because in spite of all this movie's flaws, I want to see how the story unfolds. I want to see more. I want to see this trilogy completed. And that stands in stark contrast to the Hobbit movies, where I already know the story and I liked the story and the story was complete and it was good and a pretty direct adaptation to screen would have been awesome. But instead we got an embellishment, a reimagining. Brian, take it away. What would you call especially the second Hobbit movie?
I gotta go back for a second, because I have such a clear picture of combining George Lucas in Prometheus 2 or whatever. He's going to have, like, remember Land of the Lost? I go on about this a lot, but remember Land of the Lost? It was like furry, kind of like half monkey, half man, like,
yeah,
comedic sidekick. That's going to be the Ewok in Prometheus 2. That's going to be what fights the xenomorph precursors.
The man precursor is going to, like, yeah.
He's going to be a cuddly little, like, mascot, yes.
He'll, like, take down their awesome technology with, like, you know, rope tricks and tree traps.
His name would be Gus.
So, in all seriousness, though, thinking about it, as Eric goes on and on, poor filmmaking is poor filmmaking. And it sounds like that was horrible. I honestly don't remember half that shit because I was just so uninterested in it. Sorry. Poor filmmaking is just not being able to hold someone's attention to. But I wonder, is there any alien source material? Or that was the first telling, at least.
Right. Like, well, the first movie, I mean, is where it all began. There wasn't much prior to this. They definitely bit from, you know, some old sci-fi. They definitely bit from some old sci-fi writers, but it was its own entity. It was the beginning and the launch pad, really. I mean, if there was anything prior, and there was some small bits and pieces, it wasn't substantial enough to give anything a storyline. This is really where it kicked off.
It's not like this is counterintuitive to something Geiger said in the Necronomicon or something.
Right, right. Nothing like that. Nothing whatsoever. Right. So, you know, that set the framework. Aliens changed up the theme, but really stayed true to the lore. And people were obviously very happy with Aliens as a sequel, and they should be. It's fantastic. And, you know, people debate all the time whether Alien was better, whether Aliens was better. I look at them as two different entities. One is definitely a horror film. One is an action film. They're totally different films that take place in the same universe and telling of the same story. The only thing I would argue is that cinematically, the first film is significantly better. And I don't know too many people who would argue that point. When you're talking entertainment factor, if you want to argue that two is better, I understand where people are coming from. But that being said, yeah, there's no source material, and they've kind of run rampant with that because of it, which is why three took a weird turn, and then four was all over the place, and then, you know, they went with comics as source material after that. In fact, they even went a little with comics and source material in three, just using the idea that came out of the comics that whatever host they invaded, they took on some of the characteristics of their host. So that's it for source material. I mean, that is it. There's not a lot to go on prior to the original film.
So I don't feel so bad saying that the knife in my back is bigger than the knife in yours. I hate to make it a competition, but at least you didn't know what to expect.
Sure.
I thought I knew what to expect. and it turns out a face hugger and a cesarean section would have been preferable.
To experience, actually.
I have no idea. At least Ripley's son wasn't in the picture, because maybe he was possibly standing at that spot in another story or something like that. At least Legolas didn't surf down a river of black goo on a wheelbarrow.
That would have been great.
Although,
in surfing down the Black River, it would have been a wiser decision to surf down and shoot arrows than it would have been to go, who's a pretty girl, to the monsters that were emerging from it.
It's true. Let me say this, Brian, before you get more into what you're saying, because it's sort of to motivate things in the same way I did for Eric. As I was with Eric to see Prometheus, I was with you to see the second Hobbit movie, and I'd already seen it once, and I couldn't wait to see it with you because I already had certain predictions for how you would react, and you did not disappoint. At one point during the movie, during just some outrageous scene, you just couldn't help yourself, and you were normally a very, you know, considerate, reserved moviegoer. You just exclaimed, like, at the top of your lung, "What the hell is going on?"
I'd really love to remember it the way Tom did, but it wasn't that word. It was the big one, and there was like an 8-year-old sitting in the seat next to me. I really feel bad about that. I keep mentioning it because I hope the 8-year-old will listen to the podcast someday and understand how apologetic I am. I kind of forgot where I was, and it was just so silly. Yeah, I lost myself. I honestly don't even know where to begin. At least people acted like people. It was a well-done movie. I can't. If I had never read anything by Tolkien, I might have enjoyed the movie. If I believed that orcs happened to be of Asian descent and had an ancient sect of ninja warrior, I might possibly believe that. If, you know, hey, why not? Legolas was in the first couple. Why not this one? It's just the liberties he took with, I guess, what I expected.
So the inclusion of Legolas, who is not in the book, the assassin ninja orcs, Tauriel, who is completely just made up. I mean, where do you, there's so many things to object to. I'm trying to guide you because I understand it's like there's so many choices, so many paths to go down here, you don't know which one to go down.
But, again, if you hadn't read those books, what's so horrible about Tariel? She's a little silly. She's over the top powerful. She's, you know, obviously like, ooh, a big strong woman. But she, for the most part, makes sensible choices. For the most part, acts like a thinking human being. She didn't like try to befriend the orcs and wound up stabbed to death. You know, like.
I guess I question, in this one, it's not so much the motivations and the actions of the characters as it is the film elements that bother me. Like, I really didn't want the dwarves, who are like the stoic heroes, although I guess that's not really fair to say because they do have their lighter side, but whatever. I didn't want elves dancing on their heads, like, you know, doing trick shots and killing orcs on the side of the river, for example.
I didn't want elves killing anything or doing anything when there were no elves in the book at that point. I mean, why didn't they just throw in a space marine?
Well, I might have liked the movie better then.
He was like every bit as in place as those two elves were at that point in the movie.
Right. Once they leave Thranduil's domain, that's it, right? Until the end, which is going to be an interesting experience, I think. They really, I thought, needlessly injected Legolas and Tauriel.
Well, somebody had to save handsome tall dwarf from a Morgul blade, of which there was exactly one in the entire book. All of the books. There was one mentioned. And it was
Brian,
one of the most powerful characters anywhere, not some orc.
Brian, please elaborate on that for Eric and maybe anybody that doesn't quite understand the significance of a grunt having such a weapon.
They call it a Morgul arrow. I think they call it a Morgul arrowhead. Morgul weapons were basically artifact level enchantments. Only the Nine had them. Am I wrong?
I thought that they were somehow touched by Sauron or somebody in his service such that they gained these otherworldly, like, flesh-corrupting properties, right?
They were kind of brought from the other side.
Okay, which is how they got those properties then.
Which is why the Nine could do that, because they were from the other side. This orc, like, walked down the street and, oh, look, a Morgul arrowhead. All right. I'll put it on this stick and shoot it at a hobbit.
Like, he wanted at orc camp for being, like, the best at being evil or something when he was a kid.
He won the archery badge.
Yeah. You get a Morgul arrowhead. Cool. Yeah, I didn't get that either, man. What did you think, Brian? So, you objected, obviously, to the inclusion of the characters. You weren't really too into... I think you had some objections about Thranduil, if I recall, himself, his depiction, no?
He was just over-the-top silly, and I never got that. He is a king of elves. He has an entire, for lack of a better word, kingdom to lead and to support, and he just does stupid stuff.
I'm going to point out real quick that maybe you were right earlier on, Brian, in being more upset, because I think I came across as more enraged, where you just sound depressed.
I honestly don't even know where to begin, because what really freaks me out is trying to tell people what is wrong with these, and it is only my point of view. Eric, you're probably not as upset about this, because why would you be? You've never... What's a Morgul blade to you? You don't care. What is the
Now I read the book, but it's been a really long time. We're talking like 7th or 8th grade. So, yeah, my recollection of every detail of the book is pretty limited. I do recall enjoying it, so I remember going to the movie going, "Okay, this should be good." And yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
And did you enjoy the movie, or
I did, in the sense that there were definitely things that were a little cringeworthy. I mean, all of the roller coaster style scenes that this man loves to make, they're completely unnecessary, and I kind of just nod while they're happening and go, okay, when this is over, maybe we'll get back to something good, or at least something that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, as a whole, I didn't think the plot didn't work. It worked. Again, if you're a fan of the original storyline, I could see why if they changed the plot, you'd be kind of upset. But it worked. It definitely, I'll tell you my biggest gripe with the two films so far, and I really liked the first one too. My biggest gripe is that I am convinced, and this is what I picture in my head, that off camera somewhere is a line of producers for the film, and this is a radio broadcast podcast, so they won't see this at home, so I have to explain it. You know the hand gesture you make when you're asking someone to draw something out?
Yes,
where you just kind of pinch your fingers together and make like you're pulling a long string.
Three movies. We got to fill three movies.
Yeah. There's just three guys off camera just doing that repeatedly. They're not saying a word. They just keep doing it. Because you can feel it. You can feel that they're drawing it out. I'll say that's my one thing. I enjoyed the film so far. And to be honest, the one thing I was looking forward to was lots of dragon time on screen, and I got that. I was pretty happy with that. And I can tell why they decided, and hopefully I'm not spoiling anything for nerds, why, and on a book that you should have read a long time ago, I understand why they decided not to kill him off so quickly, because I think he's a selling point for the next movie.
Even though by rights, if they're even trying to stick right to the arc of the book, he should be gone by now.
He should be dead, yes.
I will say this, and Brian, I think you will be with me in this objection. It's rare that I go see a movie and I'm like praying, oh, please, no more action. Can we take a break from the action? Like, enough. It was just overwhelming. Like, one, like, it, either slapstick or just like action hero shot after another. It was overwhelming, man.
The whirling dwarven barrel of death.
Oh, God.
When your enemies think you're too silly to be a threat, it's bad.
Yeah, that got chuckles out of the audience, and I guess it was meant to be funny. I just, that whole sequence on the river could have been maybe a third of its length, and I would have been happier. And it was just one of so many pointless action scenes, like to the point where I don't care. I don't care how many more ways you can behead people. Or I really love Legolas's like seesaw thing where he bounces a guy off a boat and cuts his head off with his sword. And, it was the slapstick nature of it. It was the, as Eric said, the stretching out. I thought that was completely needless. And I mind you, I'm trying to articulate what Brian can't get out because it's just pure outrage.
My biggest concern with that is it sounds like Prometheus was just a shit film.
It really was. It really was. But you got to remember that they lied to us in the sense they said for a year that this was not in any way tied to the Alien films. Then we saw the trailer and they said, okay, it takes place in the Alien universe. Then you went and saw the movie and you're like, this is completely leading up to the Alien movies. I mean, I'm seeing familiar ships. I'm seeing familiar, you know, environments. There's an alien at the end of it, basically. You're not fooling anybody. They literally tried to fool us into what we were about to see. And it didn't fool anyone. Everyone was like, yeah, right, come on, you're making a prequel. And they did. I think, I'll be honest with you, I'm convinced that they lied to us because the movie was pretty much in the can and they were like, Alien fans are going to be furious.
Right. They wanted plausible deniability. But
right,
that stands in sharp contrast to taking a completed body of work and saying, this is an adaptation of that thing you already love. This isn't a continuation or a sequel or a prequel or even a reimagining. This is that brought to screen.
So let me ask you, would you argue, based on the same idea, because it's the same idea, that Brian has a right to be more upset about The Hobbit than Star Wars fans have to be upset at the prequels?
I've been weighing it mainly against Prometheus.
Because that's the same concept. The Prometheus alien thing is very similar to the Star Wars thing.
See, I think in the case of Star Wars and in the case of Prometheus, you were they were exploring previously unexplored territory along the same overall storyline. I think it's a greater sin to take a completed storyline and just like turn it into a Three Stooges with Orcs episode.
Yeah, I may have to bend on that one. I may have to. Yeah, I see your point on that. And I have to give it to you. Like, yeah, I mean, I understand why I'm furious, and it's not going to make me any less furious at Prometheus. It's just not. But I feel bad for you now.
Like, imagine they decided to do decided to remake Alien, the original Alien, and instead of them being on...
You don't even have to go on. You don't even have to go on.
All right.
If they remake it, I'm already mad.
All right, one, assume they did that. Two, okay. Instead of this, like, creepy, tense horror movie where this unknown stalker is chasing them around the ship and you're at the edge of your seat, it's like, you know...
It's wire foo.
Yeah, Ripley's like drop kicking aliens out of airlocks and like snapping necks. And
I immediately pictured, and you're going to love this reference, Tom. I know you're going to love this reference because it's in reference actually to a prior show you did with my brother, of all people, where I immediately pictured the alien slipping on spilled gumballs. And like kind of like, whoa, and like maybe put in that Scooby-Doo music where they're falling over and over again.
Yes. Right, we should probably mention at this time, and I didn't do it during the intro, that you are in fact the brother of Jordan, our resident kaiju expert, who we had on for our Kai January episode.
Indeed.
And who has his own really in-depth views on his topic of his specialty topic, I should say.
He's insanely knowledgeable when it comes to that stuff. He's pretty obsessed, and I don't blame him. It's cool stuff. Well, two factors. When it comes to kaiju, one, you have to be willing to sit through a lot of garbage, and you really do. And he explained that he has honestly sat through a lot of garbage. And two, if you're going to collect the way he collects, there's a lot of money involved.
So let's run with this for a second. Your brother has done a lot in service to his hobby and his passion and his fandom. Let's say that we fast forward and do this same episode like after the new Godzilla movie comes out. Now, who has suffered the greater injury? You with Prometheus, Brian with the second Hobbit movie, let's just stick with the second Hobbit movie. Your brother with this new Godzilla movie, or all of us with Star Wars prequels.
Yeah, I think Star Wars wins just because of the pure impact it had on not just individuals, but like humanity as a whole. Like, it literally enraged an entire generation of just of international people. Just everyone in the world was pissed.
Brian,
if you want to know honestly how to just infuriate the world, just ask George Lucas. He figured it out.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. And to be honest with you, Jordan's punishment has already happened because there is no way this Godzilla movie is going to be worse than the Matthew Broderick one. It's just not. I have to believe that. It's just not going to be worse.
Star Wars Episode One, the movie that infuriated a generation.
Yeah.
That's a great byline for it if you're going to put out like the Green Ray version someday.
That should have been the 3D version. Like, you thought it was bad before. Wait till it's coming right at you.
It's a Maxi Big Bad.
Yes. Very well done, Brian. Okay, so I feel we kind of hijacked your segment.
he went into like a cocoon. Like, it was upsetting him so much that he kind of just balled up. Like, I am imagining him balled up on the couch, like under a blanket.
You're rocking right now, aren't you, Brian? You're rocking to soothe yourself.
I the Jar Jar impression got me over it. Now I'm
we could, as pretty much every nerd on Earth has done, spend the next 8 hours talking about the horror that was Episode One and the slightly less offensive horrors that were Episodes Two and Three, but let's not.
Yeah, there's no need. And to be honest, if your listeners have Netflix, they just need to watch The People versus George Lucas because it sums things up beautifully, and there's nothing that needs to be said that's not said in those films or in that particular film, that documentary. It's agreed. Perfect.
Agreed. So Brian, any final thoughts on the desolation of Smaug, I mean, I can think of a couple more real doozies.
I don't think the instances matter. I think it's intent.
Okay.
Jackson had built up a lot of trust because, for the most part, Lord of the Rings and the Two Towers were really good. Even as a fan, they were really good. Return of the King got a little wonky. Special Edition had some shit that just kind of off the end. But at least he had the good sense to cut that from the real movie. Hobbit was great. I didn't hate The Hobbit.
Right, but Desolation of Smaug was really, felt kind of ham-fisted. And
I think Desolation of Smaug felt like one of those games where the longer you wait, the more you get, and then you decide to cash out, and he was just like, one film, well, that's a lot of money, but two films, that's a lot of money, maybe I should cash out. Three films, ooh, it's getting, it's so much. Four films, oh, I can't wait anymore. Five films, okay, I give up. Cash in.
Well, all right, I will just add then to nitpick one little scene that I have to say the absolute best moment in the film was when the title of the film was recited as they were overlooking the ruins of the city of Dale or whatever it was. And the old grizzled soldier dwarf, whose name I don't even remember from the book, "Behold the ruins of Dale. Behold." And as they said this, I mentioned this in our previous episode too, I was like pointing at the screen with each word. The Desolation of Smaug. I'm surprised the title didn't flash back up on the screen when they did that.
They could have gotten like a really good 3D effect with it too, like popping back and forth in your face, like, yeah.
Smaug. Look at this desolation. And they could have started with like guitar. Like showing all the crumbling buildings and stuff. Okay. On a good note, did you like Smaug at least in the movie, Brian? Did you...
I liked Smaug as long as he was one-on-one with Bilbo.
You didn't like the... We met over this. You didn't like the Scooby-Doo chasing back and forth throughout this.
Those wily dwarves played him like a chump! he was confused.
Yeah, I really don't think this ancient, like, dragon who was created by, if not Sauron, then his master Melkor. I don't remember in the lore who created all the dragons, or this dragon in particular, would be so easily duped and tricked and provoked by dwarves. But he sure was. Hey, over here! No, over here!
Dragons were kind of on par with Balrogs.
Yeah.
Kind of on par with Gandalf the Grey.
Yeah, they were like these demigod-type creatures or something, or angelic-type beings, right?
And the dwarves breaking up blows his mind? Holy shit, where'd they go?!
In his defense, he was groggy. He'd been asleep for like 60 years. He was, you know, his head wasn't clear. Or something like that. I can't make any excuses. I've tried, okay? I tried to play Smaug's advocate, but I can't do it. Oh boy. All right, so is the final verdict that Brian and fans of The Hobbit are more wrong than Eric and fans of Aliens? I will come in as the tiebreaker. Eric, what do you say?
You know, I'm going to go ahead I don't know. I guess I'll tip my cap. I get it. You know what? And here's the thing. I think if anyone's listening, they can tell by the tone of my voice and the tone of Brian's voice that he's already won.
Brian, do you concur that you've won by losing?
You've won by losing miserably. Yeah.
Your case sounds bad, man. I'm not defending that movie in any way. It was pretty stinky, but at least it didn't shit on your Star Wars collection.
Oh, I can't argue with that. And yeah, I think that the Hobbit fan was definitely the more grievously injured party in these reimaginings. So yeah, we're going to give it to The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, as being a worse offense. Okay, so it occurs to me that we have not discussed RoboCop, and the RoboCop remake is kind of what motivated tonight's episode. So I will play the neutral party, even though I'm not. And Eric, you've seen it.
I've seen it.
Brian, you have not.
I didn't jerk myself out yet.
Okay. So, as a service to the badly wounded Brian, Eric, you can give RoboCop a recommendation or not. What do you think? Should he go see it?
I actually already gave it my review. My review was, I've seen it. That was the review. This was my big problem with the movie, and I know it sounds weird, but when we all got together to see this film, we discussed this for a while about how much we planned, and I think everyone else did too, to loathe this film. We were excited for one of two reasons. Either we were going to get a spectacular film and we could come out of the theater going, wow, that turned out to be awesome, or we were going to get what we all assumed we were going to get and get a big pile of garbage. The problem is we got a decent film that nobody cares about.
Right, we got background.
Like, I left that film going, okay. And here's my biggest issue with saying that, is one, it left me nothing to talk about in the parking lot after the movie, because all I could just go was, it was okay. Not exciting. And two, and here's the bigger issue, is there's going to be a whole generation of kids that now grow up going, RoboCop, meh. So, parents, do yourselves a favor, do your kids a favor, I don't care if they're four, sit them down, put on the director's cut of the original RoboCop, watch them, watch Murphy get blown to pieces, and consider yourself a better person for doing it.
There you go, Brian. So that's Eric's recommendation. I don't even have to tell you that I agree. So what do you think? You going to go see it?
I'd like to point out that Eric's recommendation is watch the original. So no, I'm probably going to pass on this one.
And here's the issue. It's not a bad film. It's just you will watch it and you'll go, why do I care? Like,
right.
You're never attached to any of the characters. But again, like, the action's kind of cool, but it's not over the top or gory or anything that might lure you in. The whole community, even though the whole thing is supposed to be like based in the future, like in the original movie, they didn't even have good movie making technology. And you still got the feeling that this was happening in future Detroit. You don't feel that way in this film. It looks like modern day Detroit, only a little brighter.
It's actually nice. It looks bright. It looks kind of nice.
Sunny out. Yeah. Like I assume from my knowledge of Detroit that it's just always cloudy and miserable and there's just lightning on the horizon all the time. But no, it looked okay. I'd live there if it was like in the movie. You know, be great. Although I'd have to be a Red Wings fan, and that's not okay. And they pushed that in the movie a lot.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. So there it is, Brian. It gets a solid, if it's on cable, don't necessarily change the channel, but, you know, maybe find something else to do while it's on to keep your mind occupied.
Background noise. Yes.
It gets two thumbs horizontally.
It gets two shoulders shrugged. It. Sorry, what's that? Say it again.
I said, don't even bother killing it. Just...
Yeah.
Right. It's a two-shoulder shrug.
You know, I thought about this after the fact. We were discussing this. And it would have made more sense for them to make a new RoboCop film, and even a new RoboCop based in the same universe as a sequel where the original RoboCop was long gone, and they were, like, going back to the drawing board. That would have made more sense. And you wouldn't have kind of, like, just screwed up the originals at all.
You're right. You know,
although RoboCop 3 kind of screwed up the originals. So, you know what? I'll give that as my review. This is better than RoboCop 3.
That's not saying anything.
Yeah, no, nothing at all.
All right. I think that pretty much ends our episode. We talked about RoboCop. We got right back to RoboCop after our long and painful journey through Prometheus and Lord of the Rings. And I'm sorry that you won, Brian. This was a dubious honor for sure.
I didn't even know it was a contest.
I didn't either, but apparently that's why I didn't prepare like any kind of concession speech or anything. It's just...
Brian's victory is...
Pyrrhic. How awesome is that?
It is, yeah.
There you go. Okay, with that, I think we can call this episode a wrap. Don't see The Hobbit Desolation of Smaug if you're a fan of the books. Don't see Prometheus if you're a fan of basically anything to do with aliens. And see RoboCop if you don't really care. That's the moral of the story. Oh, but in my rush to get out the theater door, I almost forgot some important closing remarks. If you are fans of our show and want to encourage us to keep this format instead of reimagining it in some horrible sequel, we highly recommend that you subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us favorably, write us an awesome review, etc., or check us out on the excellent streaming service known as Stitcher.
And if you want to be part of the fun, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, do whatever that thing you do is on Google Plus, and if you want to take the next level, if you're really a fanboy, you can join our Facebook group.
Also, drop us a line at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com and check us out at nerdstravaganza.com. See ya!